Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, August the 14th. Did you participate in after-school activities? Extracurricular stuff like drama or music or chess club? How important are these activities to a student's education and overall high school experience? And should it disturb us that these activities are disappearing in some public school districts, notably in Milwaukee, according to a recent article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel? And it's a trend that's being seen in other cities, too, around the country. Why are these after-school activities on the decline, and does it really matter? Are they on the decline in your school district, too? We'll talk with our guest and welcome your questions and experiences as we go along at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Michael Apple, the John Bascom Professor of Curriculum and Instruction and Educational Policy at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. His most recent book, Democratic Schools, Second Edition, Lessons in Powerful Education, was released earlier this year. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So why are these after-school activities vanishing in Milwaukee?
It's not just Milwaukee. This is a national trend, unfortunately, and it's a complicated issue. But basically, there are two or three kinds of reasons. One, I think, profoundly, is funding. We have a broken school finance system, not just here, but in most states in the United States. And what is happening is increasingly people are simply lopping off what are seen as, in quotes, frills, and that would include music and the arts and other kinds of things within the curriculum itself. And then after-school programs, even more, are subject to being cut out, in part because of the economic crisis that so many school districts are facing. So as we know, in the northern part of Wisconsin, last year and the year before, there are school districts talking about having to close because they couldn't afford to bus their students anymore. So this is a larger issue. It's also an issue about changing priorities in education. So No Child Left Behind, which is probably one of the worst sets of policies in the history of U.S. education, at least in the last 50 or 60 years, and one of the reasons is that it has refocused us basically on two subjects, math and reading. Those are the only ones that we test. And anything else seems like it's extraneous. So we have to say, what's the connection between the loss of these crucial activities after school and the loss of other things, such as science, the arts, music, and other kinds of things that are seen as less essential? So in order to understand what this why this is going on, we'd have to say, okay, what is it specifically right now? Money. What is it that also is going on? It's a changing sense about what in heaven's name school should be about.
Yeah. The article mentioned it really was kind of sad to read this one particular school in Milwaukee. I think it was Madison High School in Milwaukee. The former yearbook advisor was quoted as saying, forensics and stage crew are gone. We used to have woodworking and metal shop. We used to have an auto electronic shop where kids would work on cars. We don't anymore. We have no drama. We have no student government. We have no after school music and no yearbook either. I mean, that's why should that disturb us?
Well, in part because let's talk about urban youth in particular right now, since while this is not simply Milwaukee, this is happening in Denver, it's happening in Chicago, it's happening in Milwaukee, New York, Philadelphia, Dallas, Houston, etc. One of the horrors about education right now, and it's not because of teachers or administrators already martyring themselves working 60 hours a week, has to do with what might be called student alienation. That is, if you look at kids who come in kindergarten and first grade, they really love school. That's not an issue. But over time, as kids grow older, especially a large proportion of urban kids, there's a growing alienation. In part, that is because kids are not silly and they're not stupid. They understand that if they do okay in school and they get a high school degree, but it may not provide them with any more salary than if they dropped out. That is, the job market in Milwaukee, as an example, or in many urban centers, in many ways is an urban disaster. So there's no future for a lot of these kids. And much of the curriculum, unfortunately, again because of our dominance of testing and accountability of a very reductive kind, that is, it's only your last bit of the test score that counts, means that a lot of kids are alienated. And one of the things that becomes crucial is trying to find ways of keeping kids involved in schools. Mm-hmm. And also in that article, one of the students is quoted about, look, I just wanted to leave the school as soon as possible. Well, for some kids, that's okay if there's stuff outside that they're doing. But for many kids, the option is the streets. Mm-hmm. So for just the preservation of a whole generation of kids who are increasingly alienated, unfortunately, if we don't have attractive programs outside of schools, we know where they'll be. And the draw of we know where they'll be is a heck of a lot more interesting, again, unfortunately, than the kinds of things that should go on. Now, I don't want to say that everything that goes on after school is correct. Let me give an example. One of the things that the story correctly talks about is that some after-school programs may seem irrelevant to kids. So there's a whole movement, for instance, in urban schools right now on spoken word and hip-hop. That is, street poetry, kids doing filmmaking, doing histories of their neighborhoods, that is, getting involved in stuff that already is part of their lives. And a lot of the spoken word poetry, sort of urban hip-hop and rap poetry, which is quite thrilling when it's not vulgar, can be powerful as ways of grabbing kids. So part of the problem as well is not simply the axe that's being given to crucial programs. It's that we have to think a bit outside the box. That is, what are the kinds of things that we want kids to engage in based on their own culture, based on their own talents that we can see in their music, in their dance, in their own art forms, to try and keep them there after school. But that requires some money, and it requires teachers who have some understanding of youth culture.
We're talking with education professor Michael Apple from UW-Madison about the importance of after-school activities and why they're becoming a thing of the past in many public school districts around the nation, including Milwaukee and probably other districts in Wisconsin. How about yours? We're wondering if you have any questions about this, if you share his concern, whether you think extracurricular activities like theater and band are important to a child's education and high school experience, or maybe you think they are just window dressing that we can't afford. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. What do you think? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 and a half minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, August the 14th. Coming up this afternoon between 4 and 6, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. After 5, Ben talks with a contractor combatant who has a unique perspective on what's happening in Iraq right now, how it's changed, and what the future holds. That's coming up after 5 o'clock this afternoon. We're talking about after-school activities, extracurricular stuff like drama club, band, choir, the yearbook, and why they're becoming relics of the past in some school districts in Wisconsin and around the country. Does this matter? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Michael Apple, John Bascom Professor of Curriculum and Instruction and Educational Policy at UW-Madison. His most recent book, Democratic Schools, Second Edition, Lessons in Powerful Education. Our first caller is Victor in Milwaukee. Good morning, Victor.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Mr. Apple.
Good morning.
I'm in Milwaukee. I grew up in the urban city, and I have a good feeling about this as far as, you know, what's happening in our urban schools. One of the problems is, and when you discuss this, is it seems like you're making it seem like these kids just pop out of existence. But my question to you is, how much are parents participating in this process? Because, one, do they contact their school board representatives to try to be proactive to prevent something like this from happening? And two, how much the parents are participating in these after-school activities. They're very important because that leads to a well-rounded citizen. You need drama. You need the yearbook club because, you know, that's probably an indication that they may want to go into journalism. I definitely would emphasize they ought to just bring back more blue-collar trades into this because I'm looking at this urban renewal in downtown Milwaukee. Why aren't we encouraging our youth to participate in construction and blue-collar trades? There is a lot going on, but where are the parents' involvement in this? And one little problem I have with you emphasizing about the hip-hop culture and urban youth, let's be honest, a lot of youth are not going to be successful in the music industry, maybe probably 1%. You know, we ought to branch out more and get more involved with more, you know, activities like journalism, construction, blue-collar, computer, the technical trades. This can be done, again, if parents are more involved.
Yeah. Thank you, Victor. Professor Apple?
Well, it's a very, very fine set of points. I think that Victor has a good deal of insight into these issues. When I said earlier this is complicated, one of the issues that bears on this is the first point that Victor made powerfully, which is the importance of parents. We know historically, unfortunately, that just as in urban schools in some cities, not all cities, and in some schools, not all schools, that there's been a giant push out. That as kids increasingly feel as if the school doesn't have a place for them, they get alienated. And same things happen with parents. So while I agree totally with Victor that the role of parents in this, making their voices heard, for instance, in trying to push for more after-school programs like the kind that he was talking about, as well as in-school programs, are crucial, many school systems still are dominated in part by traditional groups. Many school systems as well have parents who have to work, especially in difficult economies, at times when school boards would meet. So let me give an example of this. In one city in Wisconsin, there was a concerted effort to bring parents deeply involved into school board meetings and especially into their local school meetings. Now, the parents lived in a part of the city where there was no bus transportation easily available for them to get to the meetings on time. So the school board sent school buses out to pick them up. But because of the bus contract, rightly so, you don't want to exploit bus drivers, had to have the folks back in their local community part of the city at around 8:30 in the evening. Well, if you've ever been to a school board meeting, you know that the really important stuff tends to go on about 9 or 10 o'clock.
Right.
So, unfortunately, because of the economic problems, those parents who were that you want to hear from the most, or again, Victor is very, very insightful about this, could not participate. I also agree very strongly with his points about trying to broaden this, not simply to talk about traditional forms, but also into journalism and elsewhere. And I think his point about youth culture is also a very important one. I don't want to assume that everything that goes on in, say, youth culture, hip-hop, spoken word, as an example, is exactly correct. As I mentioned, some of it is horribly homophobic, some of it is very violent, and even if it's not, I think he's correct that for most kids, it's the equivalent of sports. How many, for instance, urban youth or any youth will wind up with a pro football team or pro basketball team? And unless we have a much broader array, similar to what he's talking about, and very inclusive array of stuff for kids, we're stereotyping the kids as if they all simply are interested in music and hip-hop, and that would be a disaster as well.
Yeah. But the after-school activity doesn't necessarily have to be geared to a future profession, does it?
No. As a matter of fact, I think one of the problems with education right now is we only think about it in terms of education is about jobs. Education is much more important than about jobs. So as an example, I come from a very, very poor family in the third poorest community on the East Coast, a city called Paterson, New Jersey. It used to be called the Silk City. And when the textile industry died and the factories moved to the South and then elsewhere, there were no jobs. And given that, what saved me personally as a very poor kid was the school. That is, the vision was education is really important to you, even if it's not going to get you a much better job. And one of the disasters, I think, in terms of the way we think about schools has been the shrinking of it. So it's only about your future jobs. Let me give one example of that. In many urban school systems on the East Coast and West Coast right now, for little kids, first and second grade, kindergarten, third grade, etc., they're doing away with recess because why should we not have kids on task all the time? So there's no play. There's no way in which kids can express themselves. That's truly a very eviscerated vision of what education is about. So for these folks, it's only about test scores, and it's only about your future jobs, thereby making certain that kids feel, well, there's nothing here for me.
Yeah, there was. Do we know how important these extracurriculars are in terms of just a child's overall education?
Yeah, well, we know that the more well-rounded any kid is, the more kinds of what we might call literacies that they have, musical literacy, written literacy, reading literacy, the ability to do drama, to write, etc., the better they'll do in school. But oddly enough, there was a study, you'll forgive me for waxing a little historically here, in the 30s in the United States, when there was a movement towards more democratic schooling in the United States, and Wisconsin actually was a center for some of this, they tracked two kinds of schools, one where there was much more extracurricular kinds of things and where the curriculum was more closely linked to kids and communities versus more traditional secondary schools. And then they followed what happened to the kids. It's called the 8-year study. Mm-hmm. So unusually, we normally don't have that kind of patience. They tracked kids for 8 years. And when they compared it, the kids who went to the more flexible kinds of curricular schools with much more extracurricular activities were more well-rounded. They were more adjusted. They also were more creative.
Yeah. Again, the article also mentioned that, while this was being seen a lot in Milwaukee, that these after-school activities were on the decline, not so much in the nearby suburbs.
Right. Well, this we have to ask, what's the vision of the kids and their futures in these? Whether we like it or not, schools are related to race and to class and to gender. Mm-hmm. And so if you look, for instance, at Wauwatosa on the chart that the Milwaukee newspaper had, and you compare it to Milwaukee, you get quite a remarkable difference, about six times more, two and a half times more extracurricular activities in Wauwatosa than you would find in Milwaukee, as an example. The same thing would go on in many of the other school systems. So this vision, unfortunately, is that for more affluent kids, they need more. They're building their resumes for college. Mm-hmm. And for kids in urban school systems, they don't have as bright a future. Why should we waste the time and money on that? That's never said, and I don't think it's consciously on many people's minds, but that's the function of these kinds of decisions. So you have to ask, what's the racial politics going on? How does class work in our schools, even when we think we're doing the best things for our kids? And that's pretty unfortunate.
Our guest is Michael Apple. He is the John Bascom Professor of Curriculum and Instruction and Educational Policy at UW-Madison. He's talking with us about after-school activities vanishing, on the decline in many districts, school districts around the country, in Wisconsin as well, particularly the Milwaukee area, talking about why this is and why this matters, and welcoming your thoughts and questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 6:36 on this Tuesday, August the 14th. Looks like things have calmed down a bit in the Madison area after a pretty stormy night. Hope it's dry now where you are. We are talking about after-school activities disappearing around Wisconsin, particularly in the Milwaukee area. It's something our guest says is a trend that is going on all over the country. And we're wondering why and why it matters, and welcoming your thoughts and questions about this. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. If you have thoughts or questions about the importance of extracurricular activities for a kid's education or for keeping kids in school. And we'll also talk some about what is the answer to this, all of these after-school activities like drama and band and choir and the yearbook disappearing in school districts around Wisconsin and the country. Michael Apple, our guest, he is a professor of curriculum and instruction and educational policy at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And our next caller is Aaron in Lake Geneva. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to call and say that I think that a lot of extracurricular activities teach a lot of things that you don't traditionally learn in the classroom, like sports, for example, I think teaches a lot of good teamwork and discipline, where drama teaches self-discipline, and technical classes are important for logical reasoning, and right on down to recess, where it's important for kids to learn, especially at a young age, when it's appropriate to play and when it's appropriate to work.
Right. You agree, Professor Apple?
Definitely. And one of the points I think that's important about, you know, school is not simply for filling kids' heads with facts, where we have this vision where we screw off the top of somebody's head, pour in stuff, screw the top of the head back on, they empty it for their examinations, and then we can pour more in. Schools are also about learning dispositions, values, skills, etc. And to the extent that we only focus on sort of jobs later on simply sort of reductive and I think often quite boring curricula, unfortunately, given the dominance of testing, what we get then are teaching the kinds of dispositions and values that we don't want, which is total competition at all costs. I'll get mine, but you don't get yours, loss of cooperation, etc. And one of the gains that you get from these after-school programs is exactly that, the kinds of cooperative and collective skills, actually, that industry and business communities are saying we need right now. Mm-hmm. So oddly enough, while many people who have a good deal of money are now shedding their responsibilities to pay the kinds of taxes that are required for a decent and responsive education, they're also saying at exactly the same time that we want students who have these broad sets of social skills that are crucial for emerging industries. So there's this paradoxical situation.
Thanks very much, Aaron. Dawn in Onalaska is with us now. Hi, Dawn.
Good morning. I think one of the challenges, and I know you had indicated that you think it's based potentially on race, but it's getting expensive for extracurricular activities, whether you have a child that's, for example, on a sports team, then it's a traveling sports team, or often these extracurricular activities are after school. So then you have a parent that has to potentially arrange for after-school child care. So how do I run my child to this event? Who picks them up? So I don't think it's a lack of interest by any stretch of the imagination from the parents' part. It's just the economics, whether it's related to the just the initial cost of getting them involved in that activity, or it's the extra burden on the parent that has to figure out how they're going to get them to that activity and then get them home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a very insightful point, it seems to me. Part of the issue, I think, something I've mentioned today and in past times when I've been on, is the issue of funding. That is, let me give an example. Business is faced with a horribly competitive situation. If they don't cut costs, Walmart will take over the world, as an example. And because of this, one of the problems has been, when I first came to Wisconsin in the 1970s, about 30% of school taxes were paid by the corporate sector and the business sector. It's now about half of that. So in some research, much less. Now, that means that it's put on the property tax, and it's put on the property tax of renters and homeowners. And for people on limited incomes, it's become a disaster. Now, that has to be seen in relationship to the fact that in order to have a decent living right now, many, many people have to work one or two jobs. They're doing extra things, and we can see it in the home foreclosure rates that people are just not keeping up. When you put those two together, what you get is a situation where parents have no time to breathe and also economically are having a huge amount of problems as their salaries don't keep up with inflation, the cost of gasoline, etc. So the intensity of parents' lives, economic lives, and parenting skill lives, etc., combined with this issue of an unequal funding apparatus, means that the points that were just made have to be seen in this larger context about who's paying for schools and who's not. A lot of businesses are really deeply concerned about schools and what's going on, so I don't want to blame an entire community, but the system itself makes it so hard for parents to survive on this. And when you add to that the crucial problem, so the fact that that we are changing our commitments to schools, that if schools are seen as less important, I don't have a child in a public school, goes the saying, so why should I pay for the kids of the other? And in that entire network of things, then stuff like extracurricular activities seems like a burden to parents economically. So right now in Madison, as an example, once again, fees for participating in all kinds of things have gone up. And if you're on limited income and struggling just to keep your house, and you're working jobs like crazy, it's really, really hard then to act on what you think is in the best interest of your child. So I think this is a very honest statement, and it does point to the larger complicated issue about who's paying, who's not. And again, when you look at the wealthier communities, you find that this stuff is declining, but not in any way in the same universe as those in urban and rural areas as well. So farm communities are in horrible economic crises right now, and they too are having to cut like crazy.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Don. Al in Brookfield is with us now. Good morning, Al.
Hi. Hey, love your show.
Thanks.
And I just want to say the person that you have on your show is right on target. I grew up in the city of Chicago, and my children, they were fortunate enough to attend schools in the suburbs and never in the city. But I know the difference because I attended school in the city of Chicago and also went to one of the more elite schools in the city of Chicago. And it was basically what you said. It was economics. It was class. And it was, unfortunately, race as well. And I see it when my children, where they live out in Brookfield, they have a fine education and opportunities and things of that nature. But I also work on boards in the city of Milwaukee, and I see the terrible shame of what's going on in the schools. Fortunately, I've met some folks in the city, and I can't think of their organizations at present, but they do a fantastic job of helping young people read and things of that nature. They've got some students where they've made it into television, things of that nature, writing, that sort of thing, journalism. So what he's saying is absolutely right on target.
Thank you very much, Al, for your perspective. A reaction, Professor Appel?
Well, thank you for the compliment, Al. I think it's important that we look at what Al is saying. That is, this is a parent who has gone to both places and recognizes the disparities that are going on, but he's also pointing to some hope. None of us should paint a picture of Milwaukee as this disaster. There are people who are literally working their bodies to the bone here, just killing themselves, trying to reach kids and to build school systems that are responsive. So a national organization that has a little magazine that comes out of Milwaukee called Rethinking Schools becomes a model of teachers and community workers and students as well writing for it on the kinds of movements, sort of documenting the kinds of movements that are going on in urban schools throughout the United States. And in the book that you've mentioned before, in Democratic Schools, we have pictures of schools in Milwaukee, in Boston, in New York, in Madison, in other cities, in Chicago, a school by Cabrini-Green, where the kids and their both in-school and after-school work try to have a new school built for themselves. So there are models of things that are going on. The question is, do we pay attention to them? So I would urge people to look at the models in Democratic Schools, but also for those people in Milwaukee to get a hold of a copy of Democratic Schools, of Rethinking Schools, because that documents a large amount of effort on the part of teachers and community members and parents and administrators in Milwaukee to counter these kinds of, I think, quite damaging cuts.
We're talking with Michael Apple. He is a professor of curriculum and instruction and educational policy at UW-Madison, talking about the decline in school, after-school activities. This is a trend that's being seen around the nation. There was a recent article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel last week talking about the decline of these extracurricular or after-school activities in clubs like Drama Club or the Yearbook, things like that, in the Milwaukee School District, and wondering why this is happening and how important this is. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Does it disturb you that these activities are disappearing in many public school districts, including Milwaukee? And what can be done about it? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 11 minutes before 7 o'clock. Coming up after 7, we'll talk about the subprime mortgage crisis, all the foreclosures and the stock market jitters caused by the situation. Talk with a professor of economics at St. Norbert College coming up after 7 about what's being proposed to fix this situation. The situation we're talking about this hour is the decline of after-school activities. Many after-school activities are vanishing around the country and around Wisconsin, and specifically the Milwaukee area, though it is happening all over. An article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel pointed to this trend and prompted our experience or our interest in this issue, and we invited Michael Apple, who is the John Bascom Professor of Curriculum and Instruction and Educational Policy at UW-Madison, to talk with us about why this is happening and whether this is something that should disturb us. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I know I participated in theater in high school, and I'm sure that it helped me in my chosen profession. It also made high school a lot more fun. I also was in yearbook activities and other extracurricular and after-school activities, but a lot of kids don't have that opportunity today, and many are worried that their educational experience is the poorer for it. Professor Apple, what is it that we need to do to fix this situation?
Well, I've spoken about the funding issue, but I want to put this in perspective about that there's no quick fix to this. Let me use what may seem like an inappropriate comparison. We're now realizing, for instance, that the infrastructure in the United States, like bridges, the horrible disaster in Minneapolis, as an example, was caused in part because we have defunded the public sector and we no longer do the kinds of bridge inspections that are necessary. And we are not spending the kind of money that would create an infrastructure so that it's safe for people even to go across a bridge. Well, at the risk of overstating this, I think there are some similarities with the situations about after-school programs and schooling in general. Just as we saw and are witnessing in horrible detail what happened in Katrina, where the levees were not kept up, etc., and the bridge disaster, or our rail systems, or things like that, the slow deterioration of an infrastructure, we're witnessing a similar thing with a slow but steady disintegration and deterioration of an opportunity structure in schools. Now, just as you, for instance, use the extracurricular things to form yourself in powerful ways to become a very talented radio person, for many kids, they will not have that opportunity because we have defunded the public sector. So increasingly then, what we're seeing is the whittling away of opportunities for urban and rural youth and increasingly suburban youth to find out who they are. Now, in a situation like that, it means that we have to think long term. The long term is that we have to stop defunding the public sector. We can't always rely simply on the private sector. We have to, in many ways, fix a broken system about school funding, and we have to reinvigorate our vision about what in heaven's name schools are for. Now, that requires that we change not just the extracurricular stuff, but the relationship of schools to communities, to parents, to a much more vital curriculum, et cetera. Now, I know that this sounds too idealistic, but I think we want to be honest. This problem is systemic. It's increasingly difficult, and it's difficult for those kids who need it the most. So at the same time as we're seeing, for instance, giant push-out programs where, I'll give an example, in Houston, the former Secretary of Education, Rod Page, when he was the Minister of Education, in essence, the superintendent or CEO of Houston schools, said that there were no dropouts. Well, the reason is that for black and brown kids, because they didn't want their scores to show up on their No Child Left Behind their ratings, put those kids in a non-graduation track. They put thousands of kids in non-graduation tracks so that they wouldn't have to take the tests. Mm-hmm. Now, that kind of thing meant that those kids felt that school was no place, had no space for them. And a similar thing is going on in many urban schools where kids are being pushed out. So it's not simply a question of do we refund, though I want refunding, for these kinds of opportunities for kids and after-school programs, but do we also change a system in which too many urban and rural kids are being pushed out by a system that's not working for them? So I just want to be as honest as I possibly can that part of the problem is getting this stuff back in and defending it with our lives, but that it is a systemic issue, and honesty is often the best policy on this.
Many more callers and not much time. George in Mequon, hi, you're on the air. George.
I attended my 30-year reunion a few weeks ago, 30-year high school reunion. Mm-hmm. And we put together a top 10 list of experiences that people had during their senior year. And featured among those were things like high school yearbook, school newspaper, football team, hockey team, etc. Mm-hmm. So it was clear that the people after 30 years looked back and saw those extracurricular activities as a critical area. Obviously, the question is, what do we do? In Europe, they do have a lot of other activities that are funded outside of school. It might be sporting clubs. In Milwaukee, we have the Boys and Girls Clubs that I think fill a great need. There's work experiences. There's church. I agree that we need to rethink the system, the school system, as Professor Apple talks about, but there are other areas, vocations that people can get involved in to help give high school kids the same kinds of experiences also.
Yeah. George, thank you very much. I'm attending my 35th reunion on Saturday. Professor Apple.
Well, I think that one of the things that George points to is the importance of community outside the school and trying to handle this in the short term as well as the long term. So some schools, for instance, are inviting artists in and giving them free space, potters, artists, even graffiti artists in some cities, to have kids begin to create murals in communities as after-school programs. Now, this range of volunteers is actually quite important in the short term as well as the long term to try and involve the community more in the school.
Jim and Nina, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I guess my position as a taxpayer is that I currently spend enough to adequately fund these programs and that the government or the state isn't responsibly spending that tax money. I guess my question I've never really felt was answered well to my standpoint was, where is the major money spent in the school program? Is it teacher salaries? Is it maintenance of facilities? Is it health care? You know, where is our money going so that it's not going to these programs that the professor feels are important and truly are important? Thank you.
There's no doubt that there's ideological differences in this debate. That is, for many people, especially hard-pressed taxpayers, they feel that they're going under. Mm-hmm. And I have some sympathy with this position. My property taxes are very, very high. And for those people, for instance, such as the caller, who feel, look, we're spending a lot of money, there is no doubt we are spending a lot of money. The question is, where is the money going? So every test that we put in, especially these reductive things for No Child Left Behind, as an example, requires more people in the central offices who are test experts and accountability experts, etc. So we have to ask schools, and I think the caller is correct, where are your priorities, etc.? But in a situation, for instance, where the rest of society has evacuated its responsibilities for instance, health care, where if you live in an urban area or a rural area or many suburban areas where millions of people have no health care, then you've got to put it in the school. So the growth of full-service schools, for instance, in many urban areas where there's doctors and dentists, etc. Well, we have to ask, why is it that schools have to spend the money for these kinds of things? How come there's no health care system? So I agree with the caller that we want a pretty lean school system, and we don't want money wasted. But we have to ask, why are schools forced to take on all these other responsibilities? What happened to the institutions that used to do these things? And they've been defunded.
So
we have to think about the relationship among these things.
Yeah, and we'll have to leave it there because we're out of time. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
Michael Apple, the John Bascom Professor of Curriculum and Instruction and Educational Policy at UW-Madison. His most recent book is Democratic Schools, Second Edition, Lessons in Powerful Education. Thanks to him for joining us, and thanks to you for listening along and for all of your phone calls. Thanks to Karen Prager for producing the hour and to Cheryl Gasser for on-air production. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.